Will a good jobs report out today
foretell of a better job market in 2011?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org for Thursday, February 3rd.
Coming up, it's question time for Ben Bernanke. Big companies are healthy, but what about big pharma? And later, in China, President Obama helped sell some fish sandwiches.
But first, this morning, the Labor Department said 42,000 fewer people filed new claims for unemployment benefits last week. That's good news ahead of tomorrow's all-important January employment report.
Now, Americans have been waiting for the labor market to catch up with the rest of the economy that seems to be recovering. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has been following the employment story for the past couple of years, and he's with us now. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning, Steve.
So what should we expect? This is the first employment snapshot of 2011, right?
Right. And economists think we probably added another 125,000 jobs in January. That's pretty respectable. And it would also be a nice improvement from December. The number in December barely scraped 100,000. The unemployment rate, though, probably edged up to 9.5%. You know, look, it's a lot better than when the economy started recovering from the Great Recession. It was completely jobless at that point. Now we've been adding jobs every month for more than a year.
Well, all right, more than 100,000 jobs month after month, that sounds like solid job growth, but you say the unemployment rate could actually go up. Why is that?
One reason is a kind of a good news leads to bad news scenario. So jobs are finally being created again, and that news trickles back to people who had given up looking. So they come out of the woodwork, and unemployment actually gets worse for a while. Here's Heidi Scherholz of the Economic Policy Institute.
That pool of missing workers numbers around 4.4 million right now. That's going to put upward pressure on the unemployment rate, because the minute a discouraged worker submits their first new application for a job, they have just entered the labor force as an unemployed person.
All right, Mitchell Hartman, but you've been saying we are getting decent, steady job growth now. Can't that pick up the slack?
The short answer is no. Let me run the numbers for you. Economists say we need a little more than 100,000 new jobs a month, and that's just to keep up with new entrants to the workforce. And that's about where we are right now. Well, that's not absorbing the millions of Americans who lost their jobs in the recession. Those people are still unemployed. Economists think it could take a decade to get back down to what's considered normal unemployment, about 5%. And that's even if the economy starts growing faster again. And I should say, some economists don't even think we can get back to such a low unemployment rate. That's because of structural changes in the economy, you know, higher productivity, employers hire temps and contractors. All of that could leave more people chronically unemployed than before the recession.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joining us this morning. Mitchell, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, the employment report could come up when Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke takes to the podium at the National Press Club today in Washington. Bernanke, of course, is the guy who pulls a lot of the strings that hold the U.S. economy up. In a very un-Fed chairman move, he's going to be answering some questions from the audience.
Let's talk about Mr. Bernanke's upcoming Q&A session and other things affecting the broader economy today. Diane Swonk is chief economist at Mesirow Financial, and she's with us from Chicago, as she is every Thursday. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So Ben Bernanke typically doesn't talk to reporters. Why is he doing this today?
The Fed initiated a huge communication effort to improve their communications late last year and clarify both the financial markets and the public exactly what they were doing. So this is just an offshoot of that effort to be more transparent and communicate better.
All right. Well, what would you ask him if you were there today?
The first question I'd ask is, what's next? What is the Fed going to do when they finish their large-scale asset purchase program in June? Will they let their balance sheet just naturally shrink? Will they keep it at an elevated level, or will they expand it even further?
So that's the question is whether the Fed is going to continue these big economic stimulus efforts. Now, there was news this morning that productivity rose last year by the highest amount in 8 years, which means that companies are continuing to squeeze more out of the workers they already have instead of hiring new ones. Given that the Fed's mandate includes keeping employment as high as possible, how does this morning's news figure into Mr. Bernanke's calculations?
Well, this is exactly the response to higher commodity prices by firms out there. Firms have been unable to push through price increases as commodity prices have soared because cash-strapped consumers have rebelled. In fact, retail sales today are coming out much lower than expected in January. And so what we're seeing is that companies, fearing that they're not going to make enough money if they can't push through those price increases, are getting more out of their existing workers. And productivity growth is a direct response to higher commodity prices. It's the only way to preserve margins if you can't push price increases through.
Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Democrats yesterday blocked a GOP attempt to repeal the nation's health care overhaul. But a report out today in the journal Health Affairs says the law could prove to be a big headache for people whose income fluctuates. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
What will happen is people will ping-pong between Medicaid and the state insurance exchanges every time their income changes. The study included 20,000 people. It found half would experience income fluctuations that would change their eligibility repeatedly. Harvard physician Benjamin Summers co-authored the study.
The frequency of those changes may be so frustrating that an individual may just decide, I'm not going to keep doing this for what can be inconsistent coverage over time.
So they would remain uninsured. Summers has a solution: guarantee Medicaid or subsidized insurance for, say, a year, regardless of income changes. Georgetown health policy analyst Judy Fader has another idea: let people's income fluctuate within a certain range.
If their income goes up by a certain percentage or dollar amount, that nobody's going to care. That's okay.
But these solutions might take new legislation. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, the third day of February. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. You can follow me on Twitter at Radio Chio.
I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York on Twitter as well at Jeremy Hobson. And don't forget, you can get the latest look at the markets by checking out the numbers section at marketplace.org.
Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. Drug maker GlaxoSmithKline reported a loss for its latest quarter. A big piece of that is the money the pharmaceutical company had to shell out from lawsuits over its Avandia diabetes drug. So when you compare Glaxo's losses to other big corporations that are actually making some money, you start to think Big Pharma is having some health issues. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London this morning with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So has Glaxo just caught a cold, or is this something a little more serious?
It's more than a cold. And in fact, it's symptomatic of what's happening across the pharmaceutical industry. Glaxo's got problems on a number of fronts. Its best-selling anti-herpes drug is facing a lot of competition from generic drug companies. And its anti-diabetes blockbuster, Avandia, you may recall, ran into huge problems last year when severe side effects were identified. The drug's been withdrawn, and Glaxo faces potentially huge compensation claims.
What about looking forward, Stephen? What are the future hopes for Glaxo and really for the pharmaceutical industry?
The problem is research and development. It's costing more and more. But after the really big discoveries, the great products of recent decades, it's becoming a lot harder to make a breakthrough. Here's Andrew Packman, pharmaceutical expert with the PwC consulting firm.
Developing those new products is simply very difficult. So we have seen late-stage failures, and we've seen companies putting large amounts into R&D, but simply not managing to bring through those new products.
And a further symptom of that difficulty, Pfizer has just announced the closure of a major research centre here in the UK, the centre that developed Viagra.
All right, Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Well, the cyclone that hit Australia yesterday and damaged sugar crops has sent sugar prices to a 30-year high. Meanwhile, wheat prices are at historic highs, thanks in part to the unrest in Egypt, which is the world's largest wheat importer. And if that's not enough, the UN's food price index hit a record high last month. For more on all this, let's bring in Kevin Kerr of Kerr Global Commodities Watch. Good morning.
Good morning.
So will consumers notice these price spikes in the things that they buy? And if so, when?
Consumers are going to be going down the grocery aisle, and they're going to realize that 10 to 20 cents on the dollar, they're going to see increases in things like soda and other things that are dependent on sugar almost immediately. The producers are going to pass this cost on almost immediately to consumers.
And Kevin Kerr, is this just a bunch of coincidences? I mean, wheat prices going up because of what's going on in Egypt, sugar prices going up because of the cyclone that hit Australia. Is it just a bunch of coincidences, or is there something larger going on here?
Well, it really is a perfect storm. You know, we have all of this civil unrest happening at the same time. We have inflation creeping in globally and, of course, more demand. So we are seeing everything kind of come together at once. And unfortunately for the consumer, which is already struggling, these prices are creeping up very, very quickly, in some places faster than others. And that's also partly responsible for the civil unrest we're seeing in many of these countries already.
Kevin Kerr of Kerr Global Commodities Watch, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
To Germany now. The DAX index tracks the goings-on at the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. Well, it turns out that exchange is in for some major changes. Marketplace's David Brancaccio is tracking how the economy is evolving for our series Economy 4.0, and he filed this report from Frankfurt.
On the trading floor of the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, I see no yelling or wild gesticulating. It's the hushed intensity of a master control room with traders arranged in computer-lined bull rings. The dominant sound is this. Electronic tiles flip through rapidly changing stock prices on the scoreboards overhead. Financial journalist Bernard Unimann has an office across the courtyard from this trading floor.
German Stock Exchange decided that this is a good marketing instrument. You have more television stations on the gallery than you have really traders on the floor.
The main work of the Frankfurt Stock Exchange is really miles away in an even more space-age facility where we find Rainer Ries, a managing director at the German exchange.
Today, the Frankfurt floor is predominantly connected to German banks and brokerages.
Ries is preparing for the big day in May when engineers here will flip a switch and much of Europe will get instant electronic access to the 10,000 stocks and other financial instruments that trade here.
All 250 members in 19 countries will be able to trade directly. So most banks and brokerages from throughout Europe will have a direct connection and can send orders to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange more easily.
Old way. Hi, Hans in Frankfurt. This is Javier in Madrid. A client wants Volkswagen stock. What's your price? The new way, Javier hits a button.
In the future, what will happen is actually that a Spanish bank can directly enter the trade, will immediately see the execution on their screen, and can electronically inform their customer in Spain.
Or Sweden, Italy, most of Europe electronically. Does this mean they'll shut down the trading floor where human beings have been part of stock trading since 1896? No. There will still be some humans on the floor who can intervene in the digital chain of events so things are orderly and the prices are right. Plus, they need something for those TV cameras. In Frankfurt, I'm David Brancaccio for Marketplace.
The city of Austin, Texas, is asking residents for help coming up with a new name for its solid waste services department to better reflect all the things the department does. Things like recycling, street sweeping, and storm debris cleanup. Well, Steve, here are some of the ideas that have come in so far.
All right.
The Department of Neat and Clean.
Nice. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Austin Area Clean and Green, the AACG.
Oh, okay.
I like that
one.
Yeah. And my personal favorite, the Ministry of Filth. You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, February 3rd. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Check out our website for the latest numbers, updated podcasts, and you can share your thoughts with us, too, at marketplace.org. Viacom said this morning its profit dropped last quarter. Turns out one of its companies, Paramount Pictures, isn't selling many DVDs. So Viacom's working another strategy. Late yesterday, it cut a deal to allow popular programs such as The Daily Show onto the website Hulu.com. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Comedy Central shows like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report are actually returning to Hulu.com. Parent company Viacom had pulled them, but reconsidered. The new deal puts the shows on the website, but with ads. Robert Thompson watches the entertainment industry at Syracuse. He also watches a lot of TV.
Things like The Daily Show are one of the, you know, very, very desirable products to see the next day on the internet. The Daily Show, unlike something like Lost, doesn't need to be seen on a big screen.
Even if a big screen is the small screen in your living room. Viacom's hit Jersey Shore will also be online, but 21 days later. Thompson says it's all part of a migration to on-demand programs when people want it. Yes, online is integrating with on TV, but it's early, he says. In the end, will this strategy make a winner of Hulu? Who knows? I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
When you buy a new TV, you may see a little sticker on it that says it's energy efficient. And now the government program behind that little sticker is unveiling a new superstar energy rating. But the little energy star has come under fire lately. Sarah Gardner reports now from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk.
Last year, a government watchdog agency exposed Energy Star's flaws by submitting fictitious appliances for certification. We're talking a gasoline-powered alarm clock and an air cleaner with a feather duster attached. They got certified, and that prompted calls for reform. Now, Energy Star is demanding third-party verification of efficiency claims, and it's creating a new superstar rating for the most efficient appliances. Lowell Unger at the Alliance to Save Energy says it's about time.
Right now, Energy Star is typically tiered to be the best one quarter of products, although it can vary a lot from different product categories. So a new higher tier will tell consumers what the best of the best are.
That could mean the top 5% in any product category. Of course, the government could simply raise its standards for getting the Energy Star label in the first place. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, we got earnings from fast food company Yum! Brands yesterday. The company said profits rose in the last quarter, thanks especially to KFC. Their restaurants in China, sales were up big time over there. And maybe
right,
it was,
they love KFC in China.
In China and a lot of places around the world. So maybe it was their latest TV ad campaign in China that brought the masses in. The spot was a spoof of President Obama's 2008 campaign. You remember that? Change, everything was changed.
Change you can
right?
believe in.
Change you can believe in, right? Well, in the commercial, he says, the fake president, he says, change for you, for your stomach, for a better taste. And then a giant KFC fried fish sandwich lands on top of him.
Oh.
Just crushes him there right on the stage. So KFC pulled the spot. A lot of people were offended by this. This is the president of the United States, right? So KFC pulled the spot and said it meant no disrespect to the president.
No disrespect by the fried fish sandwich falling on his head.
For the interest of clarity, Jeremy, the spot did come back. Like after the sandwich fell on his head, it does come back and he's eating the sandwich afterwards. So he's okay in the commercial, right? So,
Well, yeah. Maybe they'll send him a lifetime supply of KFC to the White House. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Enjoy your Thursday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.